I'm gonna do the introduction to this mic now. We are still in the deep dives in Go track. And you heard me talking about garbage collection a lot, which reminds me to remember, if you have garbage you want to collect, the garbage bin is there. We are a garbage collected language. I don't want to see any garbage at the end of the day. Only if you do reference counting. Good. We are going to talk about going easy on memory. And Samir here is an amazing person to talk about this. Who will, with a very cute graphic here, explain us how we can treat our memory of our servers and our computers way better. Round of applause.
Thanks, guys. Thank you. I'm really happy being here. So my name is Sumajip. I am a software engineer and a full-time dad of three monsters, basically. I contribute to open source as much as I can, but these days it's a bit hard. I'm mostly interested in observability, distributed systems, and databases. I have spent all my life coding. Basically, I'm a systems guy. Before Go, I was just writing profilers in Python as a C extension. But we, as a company, decided to implement a continuous profiling ingestion pipeline in Golang, which turned out to be an excellent idea. So my main motivation for this talk is that there is tons of material around, like, how garbage collection works, like what types of garbage collectors are there. But there's less emphasis on writing garbage collection aware code, which means, like, I feel it, like, when you're writing code, you will know, like, what kind of tricks you have in your bag, like what should you do to write more efficient code in terms of garbage collection. And even though the topic is very language agnostic, like you mostly see the same things in Java as well. I aim to be practical as possible. And let me first start with some real world data. So this is one of my favorite conferences. And Pekka, he is the CEO of Turso. It is a horizontally scalable SQLite database. And he mentions about, like, avoiding dynamic memory management is the only thing that matters for low latency. It's kind of a bold statement, but I think really it's after some point it becomes true, because you optimize all the low-hanging fruits in your code and maybe do lots of optimizations in your algorithm and data structures. But then what you are left is just memory management, and you need to do much better in that area as well. And this talk is from Brian's previous talks. I'm not sure if you can see everything, but Viewworks is a horizontally scalable database, and it is if you can sum these numbers, you will see that half of the time is actually spent on garbage collection, and this is from a production system. And one other example is from this talk, Andriy Sibirio, and this is a perf output, and if you see the first function, it basically takes like 40% of the time, and it's just runtime GC bar worker. It's basically the marking process, marking routine of the garbage collection. And if you want some more, this is from our ingestion, continuous profiling ingestion pipeline. Here is the, like, half of the time is actually the handler code, the ingestion code. And you can see that 25% of the time is actually spent on garbage collection as well. And this is a recent Datadog blog. Again, this is a metrics database from there. By the way, the code that I showed you from Uber was M3DB, which was their metric database as well. And this is a recent blog post from Datadog. They switched to Rust because 30% of resources on garbage collection. And there is this GC friendly libraries. There are lots of them, like Go, ZeroLog, Go Reflect. All of them are just advertised themselves as being zero allocation and that kind of stuff. And people just download it, which means that there is a really need for this. And other languages. I'm not sure if you have ever heard the term, like, death spiral. That was a term I heard a lot in Java. There were Java guys sitting behind me, not myself. But the death spiral means that your application is basically doing nothing useful, just trying to keep up with the pace of the allocations. So I'm going to have a very overview. I'm going very fast here. To just mention a bit about like how memory works in Golang. Basically, we have two types, stack and heap, and the both are on memory, of course. And the stack is basically pre-allocated memory. It dynamically grows, like it basically starts with 1 megabyte by default for a goroutine, and then it can dynamically grow. It is fast because it is when you allocate, it's just incrementing and decrementing a pointers. So it's very fast because it's known, the access patterns are very known. And the faster access, because you most of the time when you enter a function, you access variables, most of the time the same stack values. That means that your, by nature, your code, your stack memory will be cache-friendly because it will be cached in L1, L2, whatever. And it's managed by the compiler in Go, which means whenever you compile the binary, the stack memory will be known. And the heap is dynamically allocated, and it's managed by garbage collection. The only thing I would like to say is that whenever a variable escapes to heap, you will you can see it as a pressure to garbage collection. And one more thing I would like really to mention is that like it is stack is cache friendly, so it's mostly in L1. So you are mostly accessing the same variables again and again, which puts them closer to the CPU. That's how CPUs work. And if you look at the numbers, you can see that accessing RAM is much, much worse than just being in the cache. So, and these numbers are usually hidden. You cannot see them in your CPU profiles whatsoever. So what I'm trying to say is that do your best to be in stack. If you, while writing code, if there's a possibility you can put that variable in the stack, please put it in the stack. And to move before moving forward into the tricks, I also would like to mention a little bit about like understanding garbage collection. So how garbage collection works, before that, I just want to say that it is a very complex software, and it is probably due inherent wide range requirements of all the applications it needs to support. The allocation rate of an application can be very high, the volume can be very high. There might be few goroutines, like there might be millions of goroutines running in your application. There is fragmentation issues it needs to consider. And there is also the pacing, like it needs to pace, basically say no to allocations when the time comes. And it needs to do it in a minimal latency, otherwise people just switch to other languages like Rust. So how garbage collection works, it basically works in three phases. This is, again, like 2,000 feet overview of this. I don't want to shame the people who work on this one because it is like an extremely complex software. So in the first phase, this is called the initial mark phase. There is this stop the world. So this is the stop the world. What stop the world means is that it basically stops your all your application, nothing runs at this period. This is done because it needs to get a consistent snapshot of the variables that that point to the heap. So it basically stops the application, nothing is running. It then walks over the stack of your goroutines, try to identify which ones are pointers. There's lots of optimizations in doing so, but I'm just saying, in this initial phase, it is stopping the world, so it means a lot for the latency. And in the second phase, it can run concurrently because in the initial phase, it basically enabled some write barriers. So what write barriers mean is that in this concurrent mark phase, when the write barriers are in place, what you can do is you can basically get updates or writes happen to those pointers. And then you can understand, you can basically detect them. You can think a write barrier as a callback to your pointer change. So this all happens concurrently. And after like marking all the reachable objects in the heap, unreachable ones are just sweep, which is the third phase of the garbage collection. What I would like to just highlight is that it is extremely, it might be very unpredictable. Because of the stop the world, you basically stop the application. And the garbage collection is also very dependent to your application because it is linear with the number of pointers you have in the heap. So, and it acts very differently on pressure. Whenever you are limit, in the pressure, it acts differently. It basically kicks in just more and more. And one thing that's overlooked is that CPU cache flushes that I just talked about. Before garbage collection, it is like this. Everything is green and everything works perfectly. But after garbage collection, it is just empty. Because if you think about it, garbage collection is kind of a software because it basically traverses all heap. It is kind of very cache unfriendly, if you think about it. So to wrap up, the garbage collection can high impact. We see that real-world data backs it up 40, 50%. Usually goes unnoticed, and it can be unpredictable. So let's keep garbage collection happy. Okay, I shamelessly copy and paste this this from Brian's talk. Hello, Brian. And this is from his talk that like reuse, reduce, recycle, this is an environmental phrase that is basically just to eliminate waste, and I think it's a very nice analogy for this one. So let's start with reduce, basically. So by the way, reduce is not all about reducing allocations or pointers. It is reducing size, like reducing any size of your memory always have compounding benefits. I was a Python guy, and I know that they have done, for example, from 2.7 to 3.13, they have shrinked the base object. Everything is an object in Python, by the way, and basically they shrink the size by 95%, and they see 60% on the runtime without doing any optimization. That's how you benefit from cache locality and that kind of stuff. So mechanical sympathy is very important. I have written a simple blog post about it. So the first thing I would like to mention is the stack versus heap. So whenever you return something, some reference type or pointer, it basically escapes to heap. So you should try to be, if it is possible, you should try to design your APIs such that you accept it instead of returning it. Like the reader interface is a good example, and I saw this example from Jacob's talk here. He mentions that whenever you return it, it means that the allocation is already done and it escapes to heap. But if you accept it, there is a chance that you can allocate this on stack. And whenever you call the function, it might still be in the stack. There is no rule on that. So returning escapes to heap, but calling does not. And yeah, closure variables are tricky. If you use closure variables, just be cautious about them. They might escape to heap. Interface engineering escapes to heap as well because compiler doesn't know the type, thus the size. They are slower. On hot pads, please prefer using concrete types. So the most important thing I think is this line here in this talk is that avoiding pointers. So whenever you write, I was mentioning some mindset before this talk. I think it is this. Whenever you write a pointer, you use a pointer, just try to be mindful about it because it basically means more garbage collection pressure. It is linear with the pointers. And if you don't use pointers, it can skip entire regions without pointers. I'm talking about the garbage collection. It is more cache friendly to not use pointer, by the way. And compiler generates extra checks, like if you panic, for example, you need to have some checks in the compiled output. And sometimes these pointers can get unnoticed. Like I didn't know before this talk that time.time, for example, has a pointer inside. So if you, for example, have a slice of time objects, they basically contain a pointer, which means garbage collection pressure. String, time.time, all contain pointers itself. So careful. Maps with reference types, slice values, string keys, and many more. So one technique that is being used is that if you have this kind of struct, basically two integers, region and tenant ID, instead of just formatting them to a string and using the string as a key, please just use the struct as a key because you will be avoiding pointers for free. And this one is also interesting for me as well. I don't know if you remember the Dutch Justice Swiss Map talk from Brian, just the previous talk. he was mentioning the buckets, like, so if you allocate like a struct value or key more than 128 bytes, this means that the map implementation needs to allocate more memory and use pointer instead of inlining the value inside the bucket. But if you are smaller than this special value, you will be inlined into Go. So there is no extra allocation. You can test it yourself. Just benchmark the code with the allocations. You can see that it is different. So I will just heads up for this one. Yeah, one more thing is that as guys coming from C world like me, there's this myth of copying is expensive. But if you think about it, like in terms of CPU, it is a myth, because basically, like copying a 64 bytes is just the same as copying a pointer, because they basically CPU and RAM just operates in cache line rate. Yeah, I mean, prefer to use non-pointer versions of data structures like linked list. You would be amazed like how many data structures can be just implemented without using pointers. This one might not be avoiding pointers, but I just wanted to mention, because this bit me in production. There is a big pprof payload we used in our ingestion pipeline, and we were caching a small struct inside it, which was not a pointer. If you do this thing, I mean, the big struct will not get deallocated. It is obvious, but just keep in mind while doing these kind of things, because we get in the head, and it took us lots of time. Our application was out of memory like crazy. So basically, avoid holding references inside large objects. And remember zero allocation libraries, use them. They're awesome. There's lots of them. And if you wonder how they work, the main trick is just pre-allocating memory and use integer indexes to reference objects. So it's just basically another way of avoiding pointers. That's all. And reusing. I think it should start with sync.pool, definitely, because it's the basic tool. Sync.pool is, again, coming from SeaWorld. Sync.pool is not a free list. Like, you cannot just put something and wait for it to be present whenever you request it. It is different, because the values, when you put them in the sync.pool, they can be garbage collected. And so the main trick here is that if you would like to use the sync.pool, you should have allocations that you would like to reuse between two garbage collection cycles, basically. I say two because whenever you put something into the sync.pool, it stays one more time. It persists to the garbage collection cycle one more time. And one more thing is that it is defined in sync. It is very simple thing, but I mean, if you think about it, sometimes you don't see it. So it's not in mem.pool or something like that. It's sync.pool because it is very, very optimized for concurrent access. There is no locks inside the implementation of the sync.pool. There is a very good blog post about it from Victoria Metrics I just read. And basically what it does is, under the hood, in the runtime, it has goroutine caches, basically uses very small caches, but it somehow managed to do it without using any mutex or lock. Yeah, it is very useful, but a bit misunderstood, so you need to understand very, very well. One of the tricky things that be careful with returning non-pointers. Why? Because, so if you look at the example in the red here, if you return a slice header return this one like that, what happens is that when you put the buffer as a slice header, as the put accepts an interface, there is a conversion. So the buffer slice header escapes to heap, which means that you have another allocation, unnecessary allocation. So the reason you basically use think that pool is that reusing, not allocating, but you are allocating more. So this is exactly the opposite, and that is why you optimize for allocations but introduce one for the next cycle. And yeah, this might be hard to spot on production, and that's why we have this static check. And please just use static checks in your code as well. And sorry, like if you read the static check, when passing a value that is not a pointer to a function, the value needs to be placed on the heap, which means additional allocation. And this is the reason. And I'm not going to too much detail on this one. This is very simple, I guess. Like if you have any chance of, like, you allocate basically a slice of numbers, and if you have any chance of reusing it, please reuse. You can just point to the start of the slice by this trick, like append trick. And please, again, if you just allocate a big or small, it doesn't matter, a map or slice, please pre-allocate, because if you let the dynamic, if you let the your slice or map to dynamically grow, it might lead to fragmentation as well. And yeah, strings.builder, bytes.buffer, like all this stuff, they're optimized for making no intermediate allocations as well. Oops, okay. Recycle. So for me, recycle is all about like tuning the garbage collection, tuning the parameters. And if you look at it, like I really think that Golang team has done great job at just abstracting all these garbage collection details into two basic configuration parameters. One of them is the Go GC, which means that, okay, like if you set it to 100%, for example, what it means that I have this, the current heap, it is X bytes. Whenever it becomes like it doubles, it becomes 1% more, 100% more, just trigger the GC. That's how it, that way what it does. And the Go mem limit is basically saying that, okay, it is the hard limit for the Go runtime. Do not get this threshold. But it is also a nice thing. It is also a soft limit for the operating system, because you would like to avoid out of memory errors, because whenever out of memory occurs, it might end up very weirdly. This gives you a chance to set a proper value without out of memory, and the Go runtime can act and by the way, when garbage collection nears this limit, nears this Go mem limit, it acts more aggressively, try to reduce. There is a nice tool that show you can just select Go GC memory limit and play with it. Okay, tools overview. I have a few minutes left, so this is overview for a reason. I think Go is unparalleled when it comes to observability. It is like in the runtime, you have lots and lots of tools. I'm not going very detailed on them. There's tons of material. I just would like to mention, like, profiling memory. You can basically use heap life objects size to debug memory leaks. You can use allocation count per function and line level, by the way. Line level is also very interesting as well. You can basically observe allocation frequency and maybe use sync.pool. And this is, again, like an older, I was really, really lazy to just do it myself. I used Ryan's talk again. But this is line profiling. I'm still amazed by it. You can do line profiling, and it shows you per line allocation information. And the escape analysis, again, try to be on the stack, not heap. So this is your tool to do it. If you run this tool, it basically compiles and basically says you, I will be on the stack or not. So you can use this tool to decide if you're on the stack. Sometimes it's not easy to spot. And one tool that I'd like to mention, because I feel it's kind of underrated, execution tracer is one of them. I feel that it is the most cinematic visualization. What I mean by that is that it offers the most realistic view on what happens inside your application, because it shows the time and it shows the important events happening in your application. It can be log acquire, it can be garbage collection, whatever. Like you will see a timeline of events happening, and you can also see the garbage collection pressure and phases and the latency. Like stop the world, every phase that I just mentioned, you can see and visualize it. And yeah, you can debug log contention issues as well. And it is safe on production, kind of safe. Why I say that? Because we, with 1.21 overhead drops the 1 to 2% of time, thanks to kudos to Felix Geisendorfer, who works on these kind of topics. Basically, they optimized the stack unwinding code to drop it from 10%. So it is kind of safe to use on production. So yeah, this is how it looks if you haven't seen already. And for me, there's one more environment variable that you said like this, but it is for me like kind of a CLI way of doing execution tracer. I just would like to mention it. Okay, just I would like to just wrap up. Reduce, prefer stack overheap if you can. Avoid pointers, make it a habit. I mean, there's no way you can avoid pointers. I'm just saying be in the mindset of that they put pressure on garbage collection. Use sparingly, I mean. Use interface and generics sparingly. Sync pool is your friend, but understand it very well. Reuse, preallocate, map slices whenever possible, and use observability tools. I think any time spent on using observability tools is just a well time spent. I mean, profile, benchmark, execution tracer. And one bonus, one I see, the morning talk from Martin that about memory regions, I was very I didn't decide since 1 hour ago I should put this or not, but memory regions, like before this one, Arena was proposed, which is to just a way of deciding your, like, implementing your own stack in some way. Like basically you say that I don't want to involve garbage collection anyway in this namespace. And regions are awesome, and they are better than Arena, because Arena just found to be less ergonomic in the previous implementation. But I don't know. I think it will be good. So and it has minimal garbage collection impact as well. With that, thank you very much.